At this time last year, Kabul, Afghanistan was in turmoil.
On the street there was a rush of people. Oh, Taliban came, Taliban came, Taliban arrived to Kabul.
You could see the fear on people's face and everybody's running all over the places.
That sound is from a new podcast called Kabul Falling, about the withdrawal of U.S. and allied forces from Afghanistan a year ago. Host Niloufar Hedayat is with us now. Niloufar, welcome. And first of all, this project is personal for you because your family fled Afghanistan in 1994. How did it feel to witness the fall of Kabul from afar?
It doesn't just hit close to home. It hits home. That's where I was born. I was born in Kabul in the middle of a war. America's previous war with the Russians, with the USSR, fought on Afghan soil. To see it all happen again, Peter, it was a reckoning. It felt as though I was watching my history unfold on CNN. To see the faces of the women, the look of utter shock and hollowness and fear in the whites of their eyes. To see the men standing by, sort of unsure what to do. And to see the reason that I was made stateless, crawling into Kabul as they did, was harrowing, difficult. But as a journalist, I was able to put that filter on, right, Peter, that we have. I was able to sort of see it as a story.
And in this story that you're telling, you're very clear that we're not going to be hearing from any talking heads. We will not be hearing from any pundits. Instead, the voices in this story, entirely ordinary people. Why was that so important for you to tell it that way?
Because it's the only way to really get to the veritas of the story. The English-speaking world, or the English-understanding world, has heard so much from people who know of Afghanistan and so little from Afghans who know who they are and tell their own stories. So it was no compromise on my part. I didn't want to tell the story any other way. And Project Brazen just brought it to my door, really.
Well, and one of the ordinary people that we hear from is Oge Wardak, a journalist working at a TV channel, a young woman who had to drive through Kabul as part of her escape as the city was falling. Let's listen to what happened next.
Oge could see the streets were quiet, but there were Taliban checkpoints everywhere, and they were questioning every car that passed. A Taliban fighter waved them down and leaned into the taxi. His long hair and beard did nothing to hide the menace on his face. Oge looked at the gun dangling by his side.
I thought that there is no more life, Oge, for you. They will kill you.
So here we have a young woman who had never known what it was like to live under the Taliban, here face to face with one of their soldiers. What does her story represent to you?
It represents what happens when the Western world intervenes, then fails. It represents what happens when you give young women a pen, a paper, and a dream, and then tell them that they can't have it anymore. Oge's story is one that's echoed throughout Afghanistan, and back in 2001, on my first ever documentary for the BBC, I went to Afghanistan and I spoke to other journalists and young women just like her. And I make no mistake or no allowances in the film. The previous government, the previous regime were corrupt, dysfunctional, unable and unwilling to change at the pace that they needed to. And they failed Oge. But there are so many reasons that we, the Western world, the global North, have to feel a kinship to her because we gave her a dream. We told her democracy was possible and we told her that her voice and her perspective mattered.
Let's take a moment here to hear the words of another woman that you've spoken with. Shaima got through a border crossing, a land crossing into Tajikistan. She was on a cycling team. And this is what she said about why she had to leave.
I called to everyone that I know that please help me. If Taliban understand that I am a cyclist girl, they will kill me.
She said, if the Taliban understand that I am a cyclist girl, they will kill me. Now, she is living in Canada, but what more do we know about the current conditions for women and girls living in Afghanistan still? Is it as bad as the world feared it would be when the country first fell?
I can confirm through my own reporting that yes, it is as diabolical, as treacherous, and as dangerous to be a woman in Afghanistan as is possible to think. Not only has the country gone through a bout of famine, starvation, they've gone through COVID, they've gone through a horrifically difficult winter. These problems are compounded when you're thinking of a young woman who's having to make her way in a world where she is almost denied
access to public spaces. For example, we know that women are banned from being in public spaces, traveling for more than 70 kilometers or so away from home without a chaperone. These concepts that were alien to Afghan women a year ago are now part of their daily lives. And you might ask yourselves, why? What could be the benefit of torturing half the population and to minimizing their participation in civil society? And the reason is power. There are no women in the Taliban. This is an entirely chauvinistic male organization that prides itself in being able to control the entire population by controlling mothers, women, wives, sisters. So this is a show of force. It's a show of brutal enactment of what unabated male power can do.
What your show also makes very clear is that there was no real plan for this withdrawal. And for some, that meant that the U.S. was abandoning its commitment to those who'd helped them defeat the Taliban for the previous two decades. And I want to play this tape now. It's from Ben Owen, an Army vet who helped get people out of the country.
It was absolutely a betrayal. We looked these men in the eye and told them if they assisted our forces, we were going to get them and their families a safe path to America.
Many of them did not have that safe path. Now, we remember a year ago, a suicide bombing at the gate of the airport, people clinging to the airplanes as they took off from the runway, just desperate to get out. Do you think it had to be that way?
It was a choice, and it was a choice made by making no decision. America believes that she is a moral and a purposeful nation that tries to do good. Where was that in Afghanistan? What happened to the ability to an accountability, the transparency to get things right? Let's not forget the Afghan people are not on the side of the Taliban. The majority of Afghans do not believe that the Taliban are A, the rightful rulers, or B, have the politics that supports their beliefs. I'm not saying that they think the Americans or the foreign forces did either, but there was something there. And so to see the country being giving back to the people that 2 years ago we would have pointed at and said bad terrorists feels a bit incongruous. Listen, as a British Afghan myself, I'm lost. As a journalist, I'm speechless. And as a citizen, I'm dreading to think what the next few years are going to bring for us as we bear the consequences of what we have done in Afghanistan.
You may be speechless, but you say so beautifully in the first episode that Kabul is still falling, that the stories of the people there fraying like the threads of a tapestry before our very eyes. What do you think the rest of us should know as we go on with our lives about what's still happening there?
I think it's key to remember that we are not powerless, that because we can't see policy doesn't mean people aren't making policy, that our foreseeable future is irrevocably intertwined with what happens in Afghanistan, because a lot of thinkers, a lot of sort of analysts in the region are worried that yet again, Afghanistan is going to become a hotbed for terrorism and for schooling and nurturing young terrorists who are anti-West, anti-democratic, and will do us harm in one way or another. So for me, there are several levels. On a national level, the British government, the German government, the French, the American government should be working with Afghans in Afghanistan to try and battle the scourge of terrorism and fundamentalism. On another level, those of us journalists or those who have stakeholders or interest in the region, we should tell the stories. It is my responsibility as an Afghan Brit to tell those stories and bring those people to life here in Britain in English. And that's what I hope to continue doing. And finally, it's the average citizen. Those of you who are listening right now, keep Afghanistan in your hearts when you're deciding when to give those few dollars you might have to charity or put it away. Think of those people and those stories like Ogai, like Abdul, like Shaima, like Fatima, who we owe a debt to.
Niloufar Hedayat is a journalist and host of Kabul Falling. It's a podcast from Project Brazen and PRX. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
My pleasure.